We're recording this shortly before the Easter holiday, Easter weekend. Easter egg hunts, y'all do that, go into that?
I know that's going to be in our future. We were just talking about that today because our son is only 16 months. So we're going to do a little Easter egg hunt.
I mean, have you seen where they like drop the eggs from like helicopters and stuff like that? And
is this a thing? They drop eggs from helicopters?
Yeah, I think so. But you want to make this somewhat fun. And as kids get older, you can't just lay stuff out in the grass. It's just like, oh, there it is. I've seen some articles, unique places to hide eggs from your kids. The garden, pretty straightforward.
Yeah, that seems like a normal place. Mm-hmm.
Shed or garage, I kind of couple that in with that, and potted plants. Inside of a cake.
Is that what they're suggesting?
Is this Mardi Gras? Like, what's happening? Like, we got the little baby inside the... I feel like this is a bit of a stretch that we're going to assume someone is going to be like, you know what? I can't find the last egg. I think I'm going to cut this cake up.
And oh, look, there's an Easter egg.
I think when my dad was growing up, you could just mail order a bunch of chicks and they come like dyed in different colors. I'm pretty sure that's not allowed anymore, though.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and patient engagement strategies for hospitals, health systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into digital tools, solutions, and strategies that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information with you and have fun along the way. Thanks for joining us. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to episode number 377 of Touchpoint. Chris Boyer and Reed Smith. See, I did that backwards. See how I did I flipped the intro just to mix it up a little bit there.
I saw that. You're shaking it up a little bit here. I think that...
Yeah.
Keeping our listeners on their toes.
That's right. Welcome, everybody. Speaking of listeners, thanks for joining us. Thanks for tuning in for yet another episode of Touchpoint. I certainly appreciate the support. Touchpoint.health is the website. TPS report, we say this every week, but it is a great way, hopefully a little value add for you, the listener, 5 articles to kick off your week. If you sign up for the TPS report, you get that email, 5 articles plus a couple of links to some industry education. Hopefully you continue to find that useful and interesting. Rate, review, subscribe, wherever you happen to be listening. We certainly do appreciate it. It's not lost on us that all these years later, people still listen to the show and bring it up and talk about it. Certainly appreciate that. We've got an interesting one today, kind of building off some of the conversations we've had over the last few weeks and months. But we'll pause here for a quick break and then be back to jump in. Chris, in today's digital age, your online reputation, as we all know, is crucial. With customers relying on online reviews, your first impression is also compared directly with your competitors.
Sure is. And Reed, consider this. 86% of patients today read online reviews, and 73% demand that that healthcare provider has a minimum 4-star rating.
Demand. They demand it.
Yeah, they do.
Well, to stand out, choose reputation to help amplify your brand and to build trust. Be the provider of choice in your area, understand patient sentiment, get actionable insights, and even foster patient loyalty.
And look, here's the easy way you could do that. All you need to do is go visit reputation.com/touchpoint. That's reputation.com/touchpoint, where you can download their healthcare online reputation management guide and build a reputation that performs for you. So Reed, there was a big hullabaloo that occurred in the middle of March.
It's a technical term.
Yeah, hullabaloo. Have you ever heard that term before? It's a maybe an outdated term, but a big ado that occurred when OCR released its updated guidance on third-party trackers.
Yes.
I remember you sent me the link to that article when it came out, too.
I did. When did this initially come out? I was Googling around a second ago. Does December 2022 sound right?
That's right. And it actually was an evolution, remember, because the previous summer, we had a problem with the Facebook pixel.
Yeah.
And OCR initially came out with some guidance around that. And then they updated it in December of 2022 that says the use of third-party trackers is not advised because you could potentially share HIPAA information with the way you're using those tools. And that caused a huge backlash in the industry. At the health system I was working at, my legal and compliance team told me to remove all of Google Analytics from our websites, which was a standard approach. I know that a lot of health systems were looking at, like, what do we do now? And many of them have started to look at, do CDPs work, et cetera. But there was still a lot of confusion in the air.
Well, and I think some of it for, and I do remember this because it was probably a year ago, so that would make sense, that we did remove Google Analytics from all of our sites. And before that, I guess to your point, you know, I'm starting to re-remember all of this stuff. We had already removed pixels, tracking pixels, Google and Meta, you know, most commonly pixels that we'd had on our sites. We'd already done that. Yeah, about a year ago, we decided, honestly, I don't know the value of Google Analytics anyway, the free version, right, of just like, you know, we're monitoring web traffic, basically. So really, what are we losing by taking this off the site while we figure out what we need to do? It actually, oddly, Chris, not to take us off down a whole different track, it gave me cover in a weird way to evolve the conversation away from some of the traditional marketing metrics we were reporting around the organization, right? So oddly, it was helpful in one sense. But anyway, that's a whole different conversation. And maybe we do a different show around measurement and, you know, some of those types of things. But yeah, so we did. We pulled that down. We started looking at, okay, well then, I don't know exactly what all this means, but I do know that if it's first party, then we're good, or have a BAA in place with said vendor.
That's right. That's right. And I think that that's the perspective that a lot of sophisticated digital leaders across the industry kind of rested on. But there was still a lot of confusion. And so today we want to revisit this revised guidance. We have a great interview later on in the show. Ray Mina from FreshPaint, he came back on the show to share his perspective on it. But let's you and I first talk a little bit about where the OCR guidance was. We'll do a really quick recap of what has happened since that occurred, both from a, you know, we talked about how health systems reacted to it, but there's been some litigation and other things that have kind of arisen. And then some guidance that some people provided to us. And then I think it would be also important for us to talk about, like, what exactly those HIPAA identifiers are. So as we think about whatever solution that we're looking at, we can kind of focus in on those things that actually matter. So let's first start, though, with talking about OCR updated guidance and a perspective that actually you shared an article. The article is entitled OCR Updates Guidance Regarding HIPAA Compliance in Use of Online Tracking Technologies, But Questions Remain.
The reason this came out, right, again, the impetus for this, we talked about that 2022 release, that December bulletin that led to the American Hospital Association and the Texas Hospital Association, along with some others, suing HHS and OCR around the fact that this violated the Administrative Procurement Act. We're not going to spend a bunch of time on that, but just know that that's why some of this clarification kind of came to be, so to speak.
In that original notice in 2022, it said that identifiers like email and IP address could be considered PHI if they indicate potential healthcare services or benefits you. But it wasn't very clear about how that actually plays out in reality. Data collection and sharing with vendors have to have regular compliance with HIPAA regulations is another thing that it said. And you needed that BAA with any third party handling PHI. But then they went even further. OCR and FTC warned nearly 130 providers about their privacy risks from online tracking on web pages and apps. That was kind of like a shot across the bow that kind of shook up our industry, because we realized this is a serious, serious deal. So much so that there was been some pushback.
Yeah, I mean, I think initially, based on that 2022 bulletin, you know, the argument was that this was too broad, right? It was overreaching. And so what's now come out here a year and a half-ish later or so is what some of these articles have kind of sketched to be the response to that criticism, and whether that the data collected on these web pages is or is not PHI, right? Because the example in one of these articles they give is if an individual visits a web page on your hospital's website and it's like looking at content and checking out the different care that you have versus a reporter, they say, who is writing a news story and is trying to get some information. So that's not PHI. How do you know which is which? Because a reporter can still be a patient at some point in the future. And so the information you're collecting online about these two individuals, is it or is it not PHI? Because you're making a lot of assumptions relative to just knowing their IP address.
Yeah, it kind of focuses back on this concept of using IP address, using other search behavior to infer website visitors' intent. That part is very hard to clarify, in part because my opinion is OCR doesn't really understand how the web works to the detail that it should, right? There's a lot of nuances there. What they tried to do, though, with their updated guidance is to say, look, we recognize this as there's still some unclarity. And they basically made a call out to say, you have to ensure that whatever entity you work with has a BAA in place accessing any of this identifiable user data. And they also warned that increased tracking technology investigations are going to occur around the HIPAA security rule compliance. In this particular case, and in the interview later with Ray, he's going to share a little bit about some of the specific guidance that they gave, which may or may not be applicable to many of the people that listen into the show. But still, they were trying to make a point of clarifying, but the underscore of what it actually means to define user intent is still unclear here.
That's the biggest thing for me, because they call out things like, well, people looking at the career site, or I think they said visiting hours or something like that, it's fine. You can like track those people. Well, to your point about like not knowing how the internet works, it's like, you know, this is another example of just technology outpacing the law to some extent. Now, I'm not dismissive of this. It's a thing, and that's why we changed what we do. And honestly, there's probably a better way to do it through some of these free tools where you don't have a BAA and stuff like that. So it is important. All the solutions providers that we work with, we have a BAA in place. They go through a pretty stringent security review. I mean, there's a lot. Some of this is really more so about like, I'm not saying it's a bad idea or it's bad. It's just trying to clarify exactly what we're talking about.
Another article that you surfaced, and I think you shared it in the TPS report this week, outlines recommendations about what you should do when you're considering the right type of company to partner with to be compliant with privacy. And here, I think the intention here is that you want to be overly cautious when it comes to tracking this type of information, even an unauthenticated website. You have to be really overcautious. Obviously, you want to see the examples that OCR gives, but they outline a couple steps that you want to take to address the 2024 update when you're looking to ensure you're enabling a good privacy framework. Let's quickly go through some of those.
Well, first and foremost, as you might imagine, it would be to get with your in-house or even outside legal counsel and look and kind of take stock of where you are and make sure that they're involved in the process.
And make sure any entity you're working with, that vendor, and it could be your website vendor that does your analytics tracking, make sure they have a complete understanding of this law and the regulation and can give you a full audit of how your web pages are laid out.
The 18 HIPAA-specific identifiers, which we'll get more into that here in a minute, make sure you know what those are. Make sure you understand what is if there's any tracking technology that's capturing any of those 18. And again, we'll talk more about that in a minute, but that's going to be a big piece of kind of the audit, if you will.
You also want to identify any health-related events or other content that could potentially be seen as inferring user intent to tracking technology vendors. And even more so, evaluate whether that information disclosed is PHI.
Explore, they say, web design features, content, you know, other kind of flows, if you will, that may be helpful in better understanding user motivations. So again, understand kind of where this is moving.
Identify any terms of service, business BAAs, et cetera, that govern information that's disclosed and making sure that it explicitly calls out an awareness of this new guidance. It's another factor they say.
It's a good opportunity to even go back. They call out in here around policies, whether those are internal facing or external to the public kind of facing policies. But what do they say? Does it talk about web and mobile tracking, or, you know, kind of how you do that, the actual, you know, practice of it?
And then lastly, in general, develop a total compliance review and audit. And also an approval process. And the best practices are to do this on a regular basis because, you know, things change so much. You want to make sure you're completely legally compliant. I think these steps or these guidance are really good for you to do anyway, regardless if you're using a CDP that has a BAA or not. This is very important for you to do. It just reinforces your commitment to privacy with your digital footprint. But I think, Reid, you called out, right, that these 18 HIPAA identifiers, after the break, let's come back and we'll talk about those identifiers so we can kind of really understand what's in the landscape here. And we'll do that right after the break.
Coming soon from Greystone, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media, live from HCIC, a new podcast that brings you front row access to the latest innovative strategies that are shaping tomorrow's healthcare industry. In this 12-part series, as recorded live at the Healthcare Internet Conference, we'll hear from industry experts such as Paul Mattson of the Cleveland Clinic, Kathy Smith of Roper St. Francis Healthcare, David Feinberg from Mount Sinai Health System, Rose Glenn from Michigan Medicine, and many others. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcasting platform. This podcast series is brought to you by Greystone.net, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media.
Let's look at these identifiers specifically, because that's really the crux of this, right? We talk about HIPAA, and we talk about tracking and some of those things. And so I thought it would be good maybe to go back and we'll rattle through kind of these 18. And I think you'll see where the opportunity is or where some of this is maybe coming from. Again, I'll take the first couple here. Again, if you're capturing this information, that's when really you start to go, okay, well, where is this information going? Like, where is it moving into who, right? Is it going to a vendor or something like that? So you think about like patient name, other elements, the geographical elements like their address, you know, zip codes, things like that, dates related to their health or identity as individuals. So you know, these are very obvious, right? Birth dates, admission, discharge, exact age, you know, things like that, even telephone numbers, fax numbers, like these things. And again, think about that. We have forms on our website where people put this information in. You're like, yeah, okay, no, I get it. Even things like social security numbers, you know, like, yeah, I get it. If people put their birth date or social security number in a form online, I mean, we know that from the rest of our life, right? That's a trigger. You know, the flag kind of goes up, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the email address is one is really interesting, right? That, as you know, is on most forms, even like contact us forms on pages and stuff like that, right? You go even further to things like, you mentioned social security numbers, but medical record numbers, health insurance beneficiary numbers. Anytime you're collecting account numbers, very specific things, even certificate and license numbers and vehicle identifiers, that is a red flag for all of us. Those are some of the characteristics of HIPAA. All of those things have to be managed very securely. Not many forms that I know of on websites, public-facing websites, contain that information or ask for that information. But still, if you're trafficking in that, that is HIPAA protected.
Sorry, I was removing all the forms on our websites that ask people to put in their license plate number or their VIN number. No, anyway, there's a couple more as we get to the end of the list of 18. I'll go ahead and throw a few out here that we'll kind of set to the side, like images, like facial, like headshots or something like that. Things like fingerprints, retinal scans, voice rings. I mean, like, again, it's like, okay, yeah, no, I get it. Now, here are the ones, though, that I think really get to the crux of what we're talking about today and are going to be the most common, like, oh, wait, hang on a second. So one is IP address. We've talked a little bit about the IP address and being able to identify, you know, who somebody is or and things like that. Web URLs or some sort of digital identifier. But here's the one, and I think as we think about newer tracking technology and how we want to target folks and understand who they are, it's device ID. Right? Yeah. Some sort of device attribute or serial number. So I think the IP address and the device ID are the two things really at play for me here. I think the other ones we already knew and or don't ask for.
Don't forget the website URLs, right, are part of this too. Those three things together could be very complicated in today's digital landscape to strip out, so to speak, even from unauthenticated public-facing pages. And those are the ones where most of the questions still remain about what does this mean and how do we tie this all together? Let's also talk quickly about, you know, the other standards of use and disclosure of PHI. We know, we've heard about these things. I think it's important. We'll just quickly revisit them. The law requires organizations like health systems to adopt the minimum necessary rule, which states that covered entities must take reasonable steps to limit the use and disclosure of PHI. If you have a form that asks for all 18 of those things, which I think very few of us do, that's a step too far. They say you have to use the minimal amount to disclose from a website perspective. And there's also a couple of rights here that users have, patients have. And this is important because we're starting to see this rise in legislature, right? There's the notice of privacy policies, or the NPP, which patients typically sign when they come into a care setting. It has to be a clear manner to say you can easily understand what your rights are in terms of HIPAA. You have a request access for medical records. By the way, there's a lot of forms on websites for that. They have the right to request those medical records, but they must fill out the authorization form to do so. Then you have the request an amendment to medical records, which is similar to that, where they have you have a right to request an amendment of PHI when you believe there's an error, and a special privacy protection for PHI. Patients have the right to restrict the disclosure of PHI. And then lastly, they have the parents' rights for minor records. So this is where parents have a certain amount of HIPAA regulations around minors, right? Those patients under the age of 18. So those are important to know, that those are what currently are established as the best ways for us to manage this. This new guidance makes it a little bit unclear, because now where does the website policy play into all of this, right? Or the website privacy policy play into all of this? We've seen people amend their information to say, we're going to be using your IP address in certain ways. Is that enough? Does that comply with HIPAA? I think that's still part of the unclarity here.
It is. And I think, I don't know, my head is just kind of spinning a little bit trying to think about like exactly how do you do what we do. Maybe the good news is everybody's just not going to leave the Google search result page. And so our websites don't really matter. So, well, you don't have to track on them at all. You know, where do you balance this against the expectation of a personalized experience? You want to be able to make things easy for a person, but we're hamstrung a little bit, right, on some of this stuff.
One of the things this article, and we'll link to everything we talked about in the show notes, they say there are really three major things that you kind of want to think about as your guiding framework here. Confidentiality, where PHI should not be disclosed without patient authorization. Integrity, where PHI that is transmitted or maintained must only be accessed by those who really need access to do their job. And availability. Organizations and patients must be able to easily access PHI if it's shared.
I like that. And again, I don't know, I'd really challenge you on the validity of some of the tracking you're doing now, not you, Chris, specifically, but you, the listener, I guess. And it's like, what are you out? So just take it down, start kind of working through, thinking about, and I'll be curious and interested, glad Ray's coming on, but they're are vendors out there that, you know, allow you to track and collect data in more of a first party fashion. And so that gets around quite a bit of what we're talking about. But anyway, it's going to be an interesting space over the next few months to figure out exactly, you know, kind of what we're able to do and how we execute against it. Even more important on how we understand who the consumer is, what our core systems and infrastructure looks like, and just kind of, you know, solidifies the need to go be best friends with IS and security folks.
Well, you should be anyway, but that is good advice. Okay, and with that, what we'll do is we'll take a pause. We'll come back. We'll hear from Ray at Fresh Paint. He has a perspective too, and he has, this is where he lives. This is what his company does. He'll share some of his insights, and then you and I will be back to close out the show.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
All right, we're back with the Ask the Expert segment, and we're having a guest back on the show, Ray from Fresh Paint, talking about our favorite topic, which is privacy and online privacy in particular. And today we have some important news that we're going to cover. But first, I wanted to give you an opportunity, Ray, to share a little bit about yourself for those few people who may not have heard the last episode that you were on last year, and maybe introduce Fresh Paint as well.
Yeah. Hey, Chris. Thanks again for reconnecting here. Yeah, I'm Ray. I'm VP of Marketing over at Fresh Paint. I have a history of B2B SaaS. I don't have a background in healthcare marketing, but I've used all these tools like Google Ads and Facebook Ads and Google Analytics to grow at least 7 different startups. So know a thing or two about how these things work. And I've spent the last 2 years at Fresh Paint working with marketing leaders in healthcare to figure out how do you deliver high-performance marketing in this kind of privacy-first framework that you and I have been talking about. And Fresh Paint actually helps deliver that. Like, we actually help meet the latest guidance and make sure that patient privacy, specifically PHI, is not shared with tools that don't have the right legal framework in place. But, you know, ultimately just helping marketers deliver those new patients and those new members and be able to measure the things and, you know, justify their existence in campaigns.
You made a joke on LinkedIn the other day about how you're going to law school because you've been talking to a lot of legal teams about this, but because I think this is a top of mind concern, right, that we have, and having HSS issue guidance, it was, I guess, a little over a year ago, like almost a year and a half ago, about the use of third-party trackers. And this kind of led to this whole conversation around digital privacy and how do health systems address that. Now, to be clear, you're not a lawyer, but you were making a joke. But I thought it was pretty germane to this conversation.
Yeah, I think everyone can sleep well tonight. You're not gonna have me representing you. I think you can look for people like Dory Kane at Fager Drinker, other people who are experts in this. Yeah, it was purely a joke, but it has been a really great exercise to try to understand and at least level set the understanding between lawyers and compliance professionals who have a job to do in making sure their organization isn't at risk and their patients aren't at risk. And marketers, let's not forget, also have a job to do, which is how do we continue to grow and create great experiences for, you know, our future patients. So it's been a great exercise to help understand, you know, those two personas in a marketing organization.
Absolutely. So let's, before we get into the new guidance, maybe if you don't mind, Ray, can you share like a high level of what the guidance was last year, kind of the fallout that occurred because of that? I guess fallout is the right way to say it, so that we can kind of bring ourselves up to speed to the new guidance they just issued.
The bomb that dropped was even, you know, before December of 2022, everyone was operating in the world that on an authenticated page, like a logged in patient, some kind of portal, you know, some kind of CRM, some kind of EHR. Of course, like you cannot install advertising pixels and analytics web trackers there. Like that's where everybody was living before that guidance. And then in December of 2022, HHS weighed in and said, hey, unauthenticated pages like your website, a landing page on your website, a find a doctor page where you're not logged in, is also a risk of sharing PHI from your patients to these advertising and analytics tools that just don't sign what we call business associate agreements, like the legal framework that protects you and make sure they mitigate and make sure that PHI isn't leaked. That was the bomb that dropped because that literally impacted every single healthcare organization in America that has a website.
I mean, they even went so far as to highlight that IP addresses are considered a part of the HIPAA framework, right? A privacy indicator that we need to protect.
Yeah, the IP address was an interesting one because in the original guidance, they broke it into two parts, authenticated pages and unauthenticated pages. Unauthenticated pages, because HHS assumed that everything about that visit has health context. It's your patient and all their information. That something as simple as an IP address could be enough to be considered PHI. But on unauthenticated pages, they spelled out in the guidance that the IP address would need to be combined with some health context, like you scheduled an appointment with an orthopedic surgeon or you were researching, you know, type 2 diabetes treatment. You need to have both of those elements. But that the way that guidance was written, it caused a ton of confusion and, you know, many different legal professionals and compliance officers within healthcare took it that IP address by itself is PHI. And I think that's been one of the biggest points of friction that marketing teams have had to deal with over the last, what is it now, 13 months.
That's right. And, you know, I've lived through it, not only with the organization I was at, but also, you know, in working with organizations, they're still kind of struggling with that. So that brings us up to speed to the new guidance that was issued, I guess it was on March 18th. The HSS went so far as to clarify some of their points. And, you know, as I did a first read of this, my initial reaction was, I'm not really sure they clarified things as much as I hoped they would. It seemed like it was just kind of doubling down on some of the things they were trying to clarify and be a little bit more specific. But you have a different take on this because you live really right up there in the front end of this and working with organizations. So tell me your perspective. What was some of the new guidance or the new clarifications they brought forward?
Chris, let me connect it to, we've probably had 200 or 300 conversations with some of the largest healthcare providers in the US over the last 13 months. Let me connect it to the things we hear all the time. So I'll start with the easiest and we'll work to the most complex. So the first is that we heard a lot of organizations researching consent management tools, consent management platforms as a way to mitigate these regulations. We kind of scratched our heads quite a bit because what HHS was very clear about was you need to either have a BAA where the data is being shared, or you need written authorization, written HIPAA authorization to share PHI. If you've gone to the doctor's office and you filled out that form, you know what I'm talking about. You literally have to fill it out in person. Consent managers don't do that. They basically, you know, it's cookie consent. And there's a lot of confusion here. HHS spelled that out. They literally said, consent managers do not replace written HIPAA authorization. If you're researching consent management tools to protect you from HHS's regulations, they're basically telling you that's not going to help you here. You still need that written consent or you need a BAA with the tool you're sharing.
Gotcha. Well, that's helpful, right? Because there was some confusion about that. So that's a good clarification. So we're back to this BAA or a written consent approach towards using tracking technology. Is that right?
That's right. Those are don't share PHI at all. Have written HIPAA authorization or only use tools that sign a business associate agreement. As of right now, those are the three options you would have.
Is Google Analytics like off the table still, or is there a place for it?
I'm going to save the best news for last, but you tapped into Google Analytics, and this actually highlights another area of confusion. When this guidance came out, most people were making the migration to GA4.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly at this time. And we even have some, at Freshmint, we even have some customer testimonials on our website that talked about like, oh my God, I just came back from maternity leave. I'd spent a year standing up GA4 and my boss told me I can't use GA4. One of the things that people learned about GA4 was they claim in their terms of service that even though they collect something like IP address, they do not store that data on their servers. Mm-hmm. So this was another point of confusion. Organizations thought potentially because they're not storing the IP address, that would make GA4 safe to use. HHS cleared up that part of the guidance and they specifically said that removing any kind of PHI from the data that a non-compliant tracker, a tracker that doesn't sign a BAA receives, it's not enough. Like, just because they delete it after they've received it that is not enough for you to justify using that tool. The receiving it part is really the issue that they're concerned with, because they know they're using that IP address and that other piece of data potentially derive other information from the visitor.
Yeah, I always thought that was sort of like a little loophole that organizations were kind of like leveraging, because look, we all know that Google has trust issues sometimes, right, in this space, but they make their business on understanding who is going on the internet, because they have a whole monetization behind it. So if they do get that information, just because they say they delete it doesn't mean that they're actually not using it. So HHS went so far as to very clearly state, no, that's not a good practice, correct?
That's right. If you're sharing PHI with a destination that does not have a BAA, or you don't have written authorization from those patients, you've already violated it. Whatever they do with the data after, even if they do actually delete it, it just doesn't matter. You've already shared it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What else in the guidance is important as an update?
All right. This is the big one, because, and our position all along, has the way we interpret it and the way that we've worked with several other law firms and helped their clients interpret it, is that what HHS was saying about, and I'm talking about website pages, unauthenticated pages. I'm not talking about your patient portals. You've got a website, your people land on that page from an ad, and you want to be able to feed back some minimum data set to ad platforms to make sure you can tie in attribution and make them work effectively. People get really worried because they don't want to share any data back. And if you share an identifier back with an ad platform, that whole machine works. Like, you can, the ad platform can serve better ads in the future. But a lot of legal organizations were saying things like an identifier, like an IP address or even an ad click ID, is not okay that it was PHI. HHS clarified that an IP address, for example, or any other HIPAA identifier, there are 18 of them, by itself on an unauthenticated page, that's not PHI. It has to be in combination with some context about a person's health information, some previous history of health treatment, or them searching out treatment in the future. So identifiers by themselves are not considered PHI, specifically on your website pages, on unauthenticated pages.
Wow. Now that's big. I was concerned about that, right? Because I think it was a slippery slope, not having that clarification. It seemed like a slippery slope into suddenly we won't be able to even leverage our ad networks to be more effective as digital marketers.
Yeah, and you understand this, Chris, because you and I, you come from the marketing side of the house. The way modern day advertising tools work, there's attribution. Like, are my ads even working? Like, can I measure that? But the way these things actually function today is you don't manually bid anymore. You rely on these machine learning models the ad platforms have built to optimize towards the thing you want. So if you're the biggest DSO in the country and you're just trying to fill your dental clinics, you just want to drive scheduled appointments. The Facebooks of the world and the Google Ads of the world, if you feed back enough data to them, they do a fantastic job of maximizing that outcome. But it doesn't, full stop does not work if you don't at least send back like an ad click ID that attributes who the original user was. So this opens up the door for healthcare organizations that are investing in digital marketing to continue to do that and make these channels work effectively without sharing PHI.
So it sounds to me, this new clarification, it doubled down on some things that are important to double down on, which, if you are, leveraging these free third-party tracking tools, you will have to address and consider, and it's very clear about it. But there's other opportunities here where it doesn't go all the way into shutting down your ad network or your ad approaches. So it's kind of good and bad news.
I think it's mostly, I think the AMA wants the government just to say, go back to square one, let us use all the ad trackers and ad tech in the world. That's probably 2024, we're probably not in that world anymore because consumers care about privacy. But on the other hand, it's good news because this is actually like reinforcing the opportunity that HHS intention isn't to shut down healthcare organizations promoting their services. That's a good thing. They're opening the door of how could you do this in a way that doesn't like share PHI and get into privacy concerns.
Which ultimately, that's the big point here, right? And I think we all agree that privacy is sort of the guiding principle behind all of this. And I don't think as digital marketers in health systems, we really want to engage in non-private digital techniques, so to speak, right? Which kind of comes us back, brings us full circle, Ray, to what, when you were back on the show before, you were talking about a privacy framework. So it sounds to me like that's now ever more important.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think healthcare brands and marketers, at least all the ones I've talked to, and I've talked to a lot, they recognize that the trust for that brand extends beyond the four walls of the clinic or the hospital, that the website is a place that you come and you trust that your healthcare organization isn't going to unnecessarily share, you know, sensitive information about you. And, you know, this opens the door into like, how can you do that going forward? How do you get both high performance marketing and how do you protect patient privacy? AMA would like you to believe that there's no way forward unless you can use these trackers. But we're starting to see now the light that actually is possible.
So let's talk a little bit about that light, because we're not going to weigh in on, you know, why AMA is taking this position.
Sure.
But let's talk a little bit about this privacy framework, because I think it's important for us to revisit that. From your perspective, share a little bit about if organizations are looking at what they're doing from a third-party tracking perspective or a tracking perspective on their digital platforms, what are the things that you want to keep in mind here?
Yeah, I told you I would save the best part till the end. And like, it was a pretty big surprise for us, Chris, that normally you see guidance like this. You're a marketer. You don't normally see a regulator dropping bottom of the funnel product solutions into their guidance. But that's exactly what HHS did. And if you remember when we were on the show together, you know, last year, I told you that our worldview, and this is what Freshpaint helps with, is that there's a way you could do this. You could remove all of those native trackers that don't have a BAA, remove their ability, A, to collect any data from your website, B, remove the signposts. So not only regulators, but lawyers who are opening class action lawsuits don't dig deeper on your site because they don't even see these trackers, and replace it with a platform like Freshpaint that can sign a BAA, safely collect the data, and then govern the data in a way that PHI has never shared. HHS literally in their guidance wrote that products like Freshpaint, they called them customer data platforms, could be used so long as they signed a BAA to replace those web trackers that don't sign a BAA. So HHS, the regulator, literally called out that products like Freshpaint could be the path forward. So this is how this works very, very quickly. Number one is the longer you leave these native trackers on your website, they are signposts. We know organizations that are wrapped up in 5 class action lawsuits at $3 million a pop right now. Even if they don't end up getting, you know, any damages against them, they're still spending $15 million defending themselves. This is like an unnecessary like use of time. So remove the trackers. No longer will those organizations be able to dig deeper. And then that tool sits in the middle with the BAA, can safely collect all the data. And then it needs to have server-side connections that control the flow of data to downstream tools. And the control of that data needs to be through some like exposed user interface that makes it really easy for marketing and legal to sit side by side, choose what data is safe to share that's not PHI, and verify that that's the data that's being sent downstream. That's basically what HHS has essentially approved in their recent guidance.
Yeah, they're very explicit about it, right?
Crazy. It blew my mind.
It blew my mind too to see that specificity kind of outlined. They actually have a number of bullet points kind of describing what that privacy approach should look like. And I could tell you, you know, they probably use the term BAA, you know, at least a dozen times in this guidance. Yes. They are offering sort of an olive branch, so to speak, to health systems across the country. But now it becomes very important for those health systems to really understand the power of the CDP. Because the CDP allows you to have that privacy, but there's a lot more to it as well. Is that fair?
I think that's right. I think there's two sides to this coin. One is what's wrong with the customer data platform? So nice that HHS called it out as a viable solution and one that they approve of. The challenge with CDPs historically is as they're built for, I've used them at high growth engineering intensive teams where we had lots of end resources to stand them up. they're not built for healthcare marketers and legal and compliance teams that don't have their, if you don't look around and see three or four engineers who are at your beck and call for the next year and you buy a generic CDP, be prepared that it takes you a year or two to stand it up. They're really difficult to stand up and manage. But if you had a CDP that made it really easy for healthcare to instrument themselves without a lot of legal resources, not only does it solve for the privacy part, but all of that data, you're shifting from a world of third-party data where you let Facebook just capture whatever they want to a world of first-party data where the tooling that you implement collects that data for you. And suddenly you can start using that stuff to improve your acquisition, to improve nurture campaigns, to improve analysis. Like you have this whole rich treasure trove of data that you didn't have before. So there's a strategic moment here if you play your cards right.
Well, and this kind of goes along the lines where everybody's kind of going to. We know that this is the year where Google is going to remove third-party tracking, right? They're removing cookies, basically. So I think we're moving into a world where digital is going to be doubling down on this whole first-party data approach. And I think it's good to also note that while you do describe, you know, these large organizations that in the past had CDPs because they needed it for the kind of work that they were doing, there's now a sort of a gradient or a spectrum of CDP solutions that are out there that can meet the lower end of the marketplace as well as the top end.
Yeah, not only that, but in healthcare specifically, like even if you're one of the biggest healthcare providers in the country, you don't necessarily have a huge engineering team to implement this stuff. So you're looking for a fully built product that's made for healthcare. And most generic CDPs, they're not built for healthcare organizations. They don't have things built in like de-identification. They don't have things like web tracker monitoring specifically for HIPAA. They don't have things like solving for embedded video and embedded maps on a healthcare website. So you need to make sure that, you know, don't take that guidance at face value. Like not all CDPs are created equal. You need to look for things that are specifically designing for healthcare.
In fact, you're going to be speaking about some of this at an upcoming conference, right?
Yeah, we're going to be at a great, great conference, April 17th through 19th in Las Vegas, HMPS. Not only are we going to be there, many vendors have booths there, but we're lucky enough to have Mike Soros, who's the director of digital marketing at the largest dental service organization in the country, Heartland Dental. We're going to be talking specifically about how do you take this guidance and act strategically? Because Mike and his team have been ahead of the curve here. And they acted on this pretty early to shore up privacy for their patients and their visitors, but also can demonstrate like an improvement in performance downstream.
Yeah, and I think ultimately really what we're talking about, although it is obviously it's not lost on us, right, that you're representing your company, but ultimately on your website, you have over the last year and since you and I've been on the show, and even before then, you've published some really great information to help health systems down their path towards a privacy framework and helping to evaluate all the different solutions out there. I see it more as you're kind of communicating about best practices that are out there and giving guidance because you've been down this path before.
Yeah, I think this is the name of the game. I mean, and everyone, I think everyone listening to this or most people, you and I are marketers, our audience are marketers. You know, I'm not gonna fake it and tell you a marketer's not gonna market, but I think what we recognize over the last year is let's just try to help each other understand this, educate the other or you know, people in our organization like the legal team and our executives and our compliance team, and let's just look for common sense ways to achieve the first order goal, which is like we still gotta deliver marketing campaigns, we still gotta drive adoption of our services. Now we just got to figure out a way to do it and that protects privacy. And you know that's really what it's been about for us for the last year and a half.
But at the end of the day, a good solid privacy framework is going to guide you through all of these technology changes because what you're ultimately doing is you're preserving that patient data and only using it as a way to kind of help them and guide them, which is why we're here in this business to begin with.
I couldn't agree more. Like I do think most organizations I've talked to, they really do care about like, yes, we want to achieve our goals, but they really do care about thinking strategically about ways that they can develop these frameworks, which isn't all just technology. It's collaboration with maybe the legal team that you never had to partner with before, the IT team, to make sure that you have good visibility to the web trackers that are being installed, and a process to manage like what you found out and what you've learned, and is this tool okay to use? Is it sharing PHI? A lot of that is a human interaction, and marketing teams unfortunately have inherited that problem because they own the website, but they don't have to do all the work. They can partner across the organization and build this process.
That's so true. That's such a good point. Well, Ray, this has been a really informative conversation. You gave a new perspective for me on the renewed guidance. Appreciate you coming on and sharing that with me as well as the audience. You know, if people listening in want to learn more about you and also your company, FreshPaint, what are ways they can find you online?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, and our website is freshpaint.io. And then if you are going to be at HMPS next month, you should absolutely come connect with the larger healthcare community. You can register at freshpaint.io/HMPS24 and come join us at the hockey game.
Well, Ray, I look forward to meeting you in person and talking more about privacy with you. Well, maybe we'll talk about other things as well, but I appreciate you coming on today and sharing some of the new updates in this space.
Yeah, Chris, I love connecting with you. Thanks again for having me on.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Special thanks to Ray for coming on the show. Appreciate his time, and be sure to reach out to him. I know this obviously is a very acute topic for everything that he does and in the space that he's in. So, but yeah, definitely reach out, but appreciate him coming on the show.
He'll be at HMPS too. He'll be at the upcoming conference.
Yeah. And speaking of the TPS report, there is a link in there to the conference, to the Healthcare Marketing Physician Strategy Summit coming up in just, I guess, at airing days away. So looking forward to seeing everybody in Vegas here in just a few short days. If you're going to be there, let us know. Let Ray know. Go by Seam. But yeah, looking forward to it. Should be a fun time to get together. Be good to see everybody.
Absolutely. I think it'll be a really great time. Lots of great events happening, great sessions. You and I are going to be doing sessions. So seek us out. And we're, like I mentioned before, we're going to be recording an episode of our show there. So definitely seek us out if you want to be part of that panel discussion.
Please do. If you'd like to host, just let me know. I'll let you take over. No, looking super, super excited. Looking forward to seeing everybody. All right, before we get out of here, a couple of quick recommendations. What do you got today?
Hey, Reed, my recommendation is going to come from a series of children's books that my kid has read. And I know I've done one before, but it's really related to something much bigger. Many of you may know that I, at one point, studied to be an architect, subsequently changed my jobs, but I guess that's why I like structure and systems and things like that. And one of my idols that kind of drove me into architecture is a gentleman by the name of Frank Lloyd Wright. Are you familiar with him, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. You know, very famous architect. I think you and I at one conference many years ago, we toured his little compound.
Towson West. Outside of Phoenix or Tucson or whatever, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, he is a great architect and very much into forms, et cetera. And the reason why I started to recommend, I'm going to recommend him, and in extension, I'm going to recommend two very specific children's books that my son happens to really love that were published by Frank Lloyd Wright's estate. The first is called Opposites, where it actually shows different opposite extremes, like hot and cold, pointy and soft and rounded, etc. It's a really simple book, but it illustrates images of various different buildings or furniture or whatever that Frank Lloyd Wright made or designed. And it happens to be one of his favorite books. And then his other favorite book is one called My First Shapes with Frank Lloyd Wright. And it shows how he implemented circles, squares, and triangles into his designs. it really is broken out into a whole series of like circles and designs, square designs, and triangle designs. So much so that my 16-month-old now is saying circle whenever he sees a circle.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he loves that book. He actually picks it off of his shelf and brings it to us. I think we read that book at least once a week. He likes to go to the circle page. He points to the circles and he says, Urkel, 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 all the time when he points at it. So I think that's one of his favorite shapes. And it's directly related to Frank Lloyd Wright. So my recommendation is, if you don't know who Frank Lloyd Wright is, or if you're kind of a casual observer of Frank Lloyd Wright, do some more research into him. He's a really great architect. Go to some of his buildings, particularly in the Midwest, Chicago area. He's got a number of buildings. And if you have children, check out the two books, one called Opposites and the other called My First Shapes by the Frank Lloyd Wright Estate. That is my recommendation this week.
I like it. That's really great. Really great. I am going to recommend, it's a clothing brand called Task, T-A-S-C. So taskperformance.com, men's and women's clothing. And they've got a little bit of everything. So everything from t-shirts to pullovers, to jackets, to vests, to polos, pants, joggers, shorts, hats, undershirts, you know, et cetera. And you can actually sort their website. They've got collections. And so they've got like a collegiate collection that have like, you know, a bunch of college logos, you know, embroidered on the apparel and things like that, which is kind of cool. But you can also look at it relative to activities. So golf, tennis, running, cardio, gym, training, lounge, yoga, sleep, you know, et cetera. But it's great. I've started wearing a lot of this stuff to work, especially like the golf shirts, the polos, you know, whatever. But really great brand. If you kind of like that more performance kind of material and fit, it's a good one. So check it out, taskperformance.com.
Cool. I'll have to check that out. Very nice.
Yeah. So yeah, be sure to track us down in Las Vegas. If you're going to be there, let us know. If there's people we should have on the show, either while we're there or otherwise, let us know. Topics we should cover, etc. I certainly appreciate all the support and the nice words so far this year. Looking forward to seeing everybody. But for this week, that's Chris Boyer. I'm Reed Smith, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.